Okay, so we'll move on then to item 4B, which is the presentation from staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you've got a copy of the investment staff report for the second quarter. This is, again, as a reminder, and you've all been through this a few times with me, but this is the complement to the consultant's report that basically takes a look at how we're doing relative to our stated goals for each one of the sub-portfolios, how we're doing in aggregate relative to an efficient implementation, and basically, is everything in line with expectations or not? And I'll highlight some deviations from expectations, both positive and negative, as I go through my report. The top line answer to those questions is each one of the sub-portfolios is largely in line with expectations. The only deficit that we see, which we've noted in the past couple of quarters, is the real return of the diversifying program is below our expectations, so it's lagging behind inflation. Over the past 5 years, you'll see that on page 3 of the report, where we have the report card for each one of the sub-portfolios. Before I get to that, let's step through each one of these in sequence. Liquidity, this is our short-term portfolio, so we're measuring over pretty much a 1 to 4 year time horizon there. We're looking at our credit quality. We're looking at the number of months of benefit payments we have in reserve, et cetera. So we're running a double A minus, very high quality. It's got a duration of about 1.9 years, short duration. And it's got 37 months of benefit payments in reserve. This is as low as it gets. This is June 30th, right before we top up for the next year. And during the rebalancing report, we'll talk about the refresh of that to get it back up to 48 months of benefit payments. Everything in line with expectations there. Actually, the positive deviation is the rate of return on this. It's running higher than we would normally expect, and that's because of falling rate environment. We don't expect the total rate of return to be as high as we've experienced in this space. Within the growth portfolio, we take a look at this over 5+ years, so this is our longest duration program. Absolute return of 7.4% net of fees, roughly in line with where we expect it to be. We treat this as a globally diversified allocation. So here our benchmark in the simple target index is if we just bought all global stocks, the MSCI ACWI, developed markets, emerging markets, everything, are we beating that basket? And the answer is yes, we're returning about 1.2% per year above that globally diversified equity index. And then we always want to look at efficiency because we are using a combination of public and private assets, real estate, equity, high yield debt in the space. Our Sharpe ratio, as Eileen mentioned earlier, is running above the simple target index. So we're having a Sharpe ratio of 0.97, roughly 1. MSCI ACWI, roughly 0.5. So we're double the Sharpe ratio, double the efficiency of the global equity index. Now, risk diversifying, which remains a work in progress. This is our last sub-portfolio that needs to be fully implemented. We take a look at this and we say we want to have a low correlation to the equity markets. We want to be able to use this as a hedge against the equity market downturn and possibly redeploy the capital in a major equity market sell-off. We want this to be highly liquid. And so on those two measures, we're meeting expectations. The correlation is 0.5 over the past 5 years. We can liquidate 100% of this within 90 days, and really we could liquidate 97% of this within about 15 days. Where we're falling short is a trailing five-year real return is negative 1.2%, so 1.2% behind inflation. Ironically, that's largely due to the inflation hedging history of this program. So the Wellington Real Total Return that Eileen referenced had an explicit inflation hedge in it. The way they accomplished that was a large holding of commodities and tips. Tips were a forward-looking expectation of inflation, which has come down. A modest negative performer. Inflation in the commodity space, in the future space for commodities, in oil prices, natural gas, orange juice, coffee, we've really seen all that come down. You heard Thomas reference the price of goods falling. Yeah. We've really, really seen that hurt. This is a strategy that we intend to replace. We are actively diligencing about a half dozen strategies right now. Our hope is that one or more of those comes to final fruition by year end, and this allocation will be drawn down to fund new strategies there. In the meantime, we think it has become the investment goals have shifted within the strategy to be less inflation sensitive and more risk diversifying. We think it's an okay place to hold the assets in the meantime while we identify replacement strategies here.
Tim?
Yes.
How are, in looking at a series of strategies to come up with one, which I think you just described, how do you actually do that? Who takes the lead? Are you the one that takes the lead in that? Does Verus take, I'm trying to get more of a feel for how you get down to that final strategy.
We take information from, or take ideas from all sources. So we've had conversations with Verus team. This is highly individualized to Cicera. This is not strategies that are largely or widely used by a lot of plans. So we'll take information from them. We'll take information from our peers who are trying to find similar strategies and similar offsets. You might recall we did an RFI just to the market saying who has a strategy that might fit. We came up with a lot of new strategies that were untested at that point in time. It was about 2 years ago. We've been tracking some of them. A lot of them have fallen by the wayside. Like I said, we have six right now that we consider under the active monitoring. There are two that we think will move into due diligence in the next month or two here. And so we're hopeful that we'll get through that process. But it is my team is leading the charge on that, but we're taking information from all sources. That's largely, we know the behaviors we want to see, and so every month when we see the market leg up, leg down, we're doing a rescreening of all public strategies, basically. We have a database called eVestment that tracks about 10,000 individual strategies. We rescreen that. We take a look at things that are either have been on our research agenda, see if we're seeing basically validation of the behaviors we thought. We're taking a look at new strategies that might express those behaviors, and so it's just a constant monitoring process. And now we're starting to see, with the equity market volatility of really the past year, we got a lot more data points that are high quality, both up and down, and now we're starting to see how some of these strategies behave in stressed environments, and we're getting validation on a few of them, so we're expecting those to come through. I'm very hopeful that by year end, we have at least two of those funded.
Is the final step a proposed change in the investment policy that would come before the board?
It would not be a change in the investment policy. It would be a better option within the mandates here. So depending on the size of the allocation, that may come before the board, that may go through the staff approval process. We would certainly let the board know what's going on with changes there.
Tim? When you say minus 1.2%, you said that's relative to inflation?
Yes. So 1.2%.
It's still a positive return.
We can take a look at. I believe so, but it's in the Verus report. If you take a look at the five-year return of the diversifying program. That's what we're taking that and we're subtracting U.S. inflation off of that.
Okay. And we went into that, like with commodities, as a protective measure. And, right? Or?
We actually we had an explicit inflation hedging category years ago. When we put this construct in place in 2015, we reclassified some of our existing strategies in there. And so you see that, that historic decision to explicitly go out and find things that would offset inflation. Some of that's in here. That's a mismatch, as Eileen said. It's a mismatch with the stated goals of the program on a going forward basis. But it's basically, we went out and hired four strategies that we thought were going to offset inflation. When inflation didn't occur, we terminated some of them, we reclassified others. So this is one that was reclassified.
Okay, I'll ask you.
Yeah. So, again, the history here is not necessarily a history of the stated goals of the program because it's moved over time. We restructured the liquidity program in 2016. That's all working fine. We've largely restructured the growth program over the past couple of years, including building out the private markets. This is the last one that really needs a little bit more overhauling before it's fully in line with our go-forward expectations. So at the bottom of page 3, we talk about total fund meeting expectations. It's got the 4 years of benefit payments in reserve. We're fine. We're participating in the growth opportunities as measured by the Sharpe ratio. The market opportunities available globally, we are participating in on a risk-efficient basis. The diversifying program providing an offset to the growth portfolio, yes, it is. We just want it to be working harder for us and producing the superior risk-adjusted returns measured by the total fund Sharpe ratio. Over all trailing time periods, we're beating the simple target index, both on a return basis with lower risk and therefore superior Sharpe ratios, and that's actually on page 10 if you want to jump forward there. Over 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, the return is higher, net of fees, the risk is lower, and the Sharpe ratio is higher than a simple target index if we just bought publicly available indices to represent each one of the sub-portfolios. That's not a surprise given the Verus report, but I want to just touch on three things here.
Tim, before you do that, I just wanted to make a quick comment about liquidity, because on the chart it says the objective is to store 4 years of benefit payments, and you saw that we had 37 months. It's actually up to 4 years, and as he mentioned, you know, during rebalancing that'll get trued up. Mm-hmm. So we are still within our objective in meeting that expectation, even though it says store 4 years.
So yep, it's 4 years. We draw it down over the course of a year as we pay out benefit payments, and we refresh it back up. Take a look at page 4. This came up last quarter. Unfortunately, it didn't get changed in time. I forgot about it, candidly. Trustee McDonald, you had asked about the coupons here and taking a look at SIT at 6.5%, and we said, well, that's they're buying higher coupons, but they're having to pay more for them, so they yield more in line. I just want to give you the yield numbers so you have that, and we'll change it next quarter. The yield for Insight is 2.8%. The yield for SIT is 2.4%. And the yield for DFA is 2.4%. So that is the current yield of the portfolio there. So you can start to see that those are all kind of in a fairly tight band there. You don't have the big outlier. No major changes here. We previously reported that Jesse Fogarty, one of the portfolio managers in Insight, left the firm. He wasn't our lead portfolio manager. We do intend to conduct an on-site review with him on our next New York visit. Within the growth sub-portfolio on page 5, just want to highlight a few things here. Take a look at that top table on organizational stability. I think it's some interesting anecdotes more than anything else, but that third column, the 1 year firm asset growth, it's interesting to see which of the firms is experiencing net inflows, which is experiencing net outflows, and just that might be a little bit reflective of broad market behavior. I think the most notable one is we're still seeing money flowing into the emerging market equity space. If you take a look at PIMCO, RAE and TT in that space, there's still some net inflows there. Obviously, emerging markets is not the sum total of the firm's business lines, but we're seeing big money into the emerging market strategies and a lot of money going into those firms generally. Firms that are losing money within our lineup largely are active equity. Again, this is the long 15-year trend of the rise of passive investing and pressure on active investing. In general and in the U.S. in particular. And I think the other thing that we see is both AQR and Panagora, those are our two risk parity managers. These are quantitatively oriented shops. Both have experienced a net reduction in assets over the past year. Quantitative investing in general had a difficult 2018. I think that's reflected here. We funded these strategies more recently. We've had decent returns there. Within the risk parity space, I have no concerns about the risk parity strategies, but just be aware of where money's flowing within the manager lineup here. On the bottom, I think most of the strategies are performing in line with expectations. You'll see that on the reflective of the yeses, where I imagine a couple of the trustees might challenge me would be in the international equity space. Again, we've seen difficulty in the international equity. the yields, or I'm sorry, the valuations are simply much, much lower relative to their own history. So the U.S. equity market valuation is trading at extended valuation, shall we say. The fundamentals are strong here in the U.S. The valuations of the equity market are very, very high. Where there's challenges globally and where there's probably a recession, candidly, we might very well be in a recession in certain European countries today, but the valuations there are so low relative to their own histories that we think there's better value there on a go-forward basis. Short-term volatility, we think long-term, over the 10-year horizon, it makes sense to be there. And then within the diversifying sub-portfolio on page 8, again, the Wellington strategy we have under, we intend to orient away from that strategy. They've been informed of that. They're well aware of that. They have offered up alternatives as well, and which are part of the research pipeline. So that one will get swapped out. I think Parametric has had a difficult start to the strategy in terms of this is a insurance selling strategy, selling puts and calls on the S&P 500. Out of the gate, the volatility spiking has been a challenging environment for them. Long term still looks good. Short term, unfortunately, right out of the gate, we hit some headwinds in that space. We are conducting a review with them on site in October as well. We did meet with AFL-CIO. This is government-guaranteed debt financing for multifamily housing construction. Had a portfolio. The portfolio manager became the CEO of the firm at the end of last year. We did an on-site in July. Firm seems to be stable. They did shrink the headcount and are reducing fees within this product as a result. AFL-CIO will likely be here in front of the board in a few months highlighting what's going on in the portfolio, what's going on with their firm, and kind of what their contribution is to the function of risk diversifying for us. That is what I wanted to highlight here. Slides 9 and 10 just highlight the total fund. Again, we talked about the Sharpe ratios, but just that line chart on slide 9, relative to the simple target index, which again, to Trustee Gordon's comment, reflects the current asset allocation at any point in time. We want to capture more of the upside than the downside and maintain that spread. We want that blue line to be above the orange, we'll call it orange, rust, something in that range line. We've seen some compression there over the trailing three-year periods from June 30th backwards, but we're still maintaining that spread. That's what we want to see there. I think the spreads that we were experiencing back in 2017 of capturing 90% of the upside and 45% of the downside were candidly unrealistic. You know, maintaining a 20-point spread, I think, is 10 to 20-point spread is what we want to maintain there on a going-forward basis with a more normalized level of market volatility. With that's my prepared comments. I'd be happy to address any questions from the trustees.
Any trustee questions? Danny.
Just a quick question about the inflows to emerging markets. We have no idea how long the situation between the U.S. and China is going to go on for. Is it possible that other emerging market countries or frontier markets are trying to ramp up their production to meet that void if the Chinese products aren't being bought? Then are they being produced in India and Vietnam and so forth? And is our trade ramping up with them?
So my understanding is that there isn't a lot of migration of companies that have manufacturing facilities in China to other countries as a result of the trade war. But that said, that migration has already started, had started a few years ago, and Vietnam and I think Burma are two, Bangladesh, I'm sorry, are two recipients of that trend that had started And that may just accelerate for those, you know, those two areas in particular. But China has been switching to a service-driven economy in any event. So I guess at this point, not expecting to see a large change or swing in either that trend or in companies starting to try and look for other places.
So then the investment that's going into emerging markets is basically, it just looks like it's a better value.
I think it's about value and diversification are driving that today. Keep in mind that the first round of the trade wars was really focused on capital inputs, commodities in general. So those are a little bit more fluid. You know, we know that China's not buying as much in U.S. soybeans and corn, but they are sourcing that from another country. That is a little bit more fluid. When we get into the consumer goods and the manufactured goods, obviously it's a heavier lift to relocate a factory. And that affects forward business planning, not current business planning. So this is something we're monitoring, but at this point it looks like a tax on the global trade system more than you know, a big relocation at this point in time.
Tim, one of the things that jumps out to me when I just see the AFL-CIO title is the experience that the Teamsters had, terrible experience, going back 20, 30 years when the Teamsters were running their own funds and huge amounts of crime, fraud were going on simultaneously with that in those funds and in the purchases of assets. In your due diligence, is there any concern that these are not adequately accounted for and overseen?
Yeah. The short answer is no. There's we haven't noticed anything. Certainly in the audited financial statements, I think our interactions with, and understanding this is a separate entity, it's linked, but it's a separate entity. This is the AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust. Our interactions with the portfolio manager, the now CEO, have been on par with the professionalism that we see at most, that we expect from our asset managers. And I would say firmly in the middle of the pack there in terms of organizational structure, cost structure, valuation methodology. It's a very normalized business. This is not an outlier. We do have some outliers, some smaller shops. We have to, you know, work with a little bit more. This one, you know, in terms of the valuation methodology, the auditor, the types of assets we're looking at, it's a very middle of the pack type of strategy.
Okay. I'm recalling, just asking for confirmation of my memory, one of the requirements we impose on all our managers is that if they are paying side fees, if there is any payment out of these funds that are for compensation for finder's fees or this kind of thing, they have to disclose that to us.
They do. Now, keep in mind that this strategy has been in the lineup for longer than I've been associated with Contra Costa. So they would have been hired before that date, but certainly there would have been, if there was a finder's fee paid, it would have been 15, 20 years in the past. We monitor the cost structure associated with the, you know, this is a commingled fund, so we're looking at the cost structure of administering this on a go-forward basis. It's certainly good to see that the cost structure is declining. That's largely in keeping with what we're seeing from active management in general. I don't mean to be a broken record, but it's a firmly middle-of-the-road organizational structure, a middle-of-the-road cost structure, and a middle-of-the-road performance expectation.
Yeah. They should change the name.
Tim, you said that we had a couple of outliers, mainly in the smaller shops. Not an outlier in respect to criminal activity or anything like
no,
that.
No, in terms of the professionalism, the rigor of the back office. Sometimes, it's, you know, we have certain managers that are just smaller, and they don't have the money for the big, complex risk analytics system. They might do something more in-house and proprietary. Trade order might be more simplistic, that sort of thing. Not in terms of legality, no gap.
Jerry?
Just wanted to clarify that.
I was going to add to Dr. McDonald's comment this idea of whether or not it has an impact on emerging markets to resource the stuff I pick up. It's so much easier to say resourcing resourcing where your manufacturing is being done than it is to actually happen. And China has got such a huge commitment over the course of decades in industrial infrastructure. It's like to tell Tim Cook that he should start getting his Apple iPhones from South Vietnam or Vietnam rather than China is not an easy step to take, because it's just they've got such a huge commitment. It's just almost as unrealistic as I'm ordering all the companies to leave China and come back to the United States.
But China is buying soybeans from Brazil. There's an impact.
That's right. So I think they can become sources, and it's remarkable that they do become sources. But even the people, they don't have the same number of people, that same base, and that same industrial infrastructure commitment that's been made in China over the years. I think it's going to, some of the stuff probably will move, but I get the sense it's not going to be huge.
Any other trustee questions or comments? Okay, seeing none. Now is probably a good time to take a short 10-minute break, and so we'll meet back in 10 to go over item.